then what I'm trying to get at is my original idea was simply if a state agency violates the provisions of this act, particularly as it relates to keeping a central registry of information, what happens then? And the bill as it originally came to us was silent on that. It said it shall be unlawful. Well, that doesn't do anything for anybody. And so what I was trying to do was simply say somebody can go into court to get a court order to say, undo what you just did, destroy those records, tear that up, whatever. It wasn't my intent to prohibit local agencies from doing what they're already able to do, and it certainly wasn't my intent to stack on to the Class C felony. I just, in my own mind as a lawyer, thought what's going to be most effective in terms of remedying a wrong in the event that it happens. And I'm not even wed to the idea of all sorts of flaming language about constitutional rights violations. I just want a private citizen to be able to go in and get a court order that says, agency, you destroy the records that you've unlawfully compiled. Because otherwise, the section seems to me to be meaningless. So can I get your reaction to that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, from the state police's viewpoint, and I believe other law enforcement agencies represented here, there's a connotation with Class C felony that represents that there's some intent or knowledge on behalf of the agency to purposely compile that information, and we attribute that directly to the felony. And we believe that that should, and feel that that is appropriate for this type of situation. However, the civil liabilities may apply to a situation where there is no intent, and through perhaps some unfortunate reason, there is a mistake made, well, then that would render the agency liable, not only civilly, but also criminally, and it could result in the officer losing his job, being charged with a felony, and imposed.
Not if we take the felony out. I'm asking you to assume that we were able to take the Class C felony out.
Prosecute the officer for committing a criminal act would be his own department. That's not going to work. So that was never because typically it's just known that the community is going to try to back that police officer. That's finally the only remedy they could find that worked worth a darn is to exclude the evidence and say, officer, well, we're going to come in if it's illegally seized. Well,
it strikes me that as long as we're dealing with the first two possibilities, the criminal action or the ability to sue, that's not much of a hammer. It's not going to affect, it's really not going to be that big of a deal because those are two of the options. And once we get the
and they weren't really taken as serious
options because you're not really going to get a local government or a police department
to punish one of its own. So they had to go to the other one. They won't throw the evidence out, and some criminals are going to walk because of it. You see, that's what the court decided to do.
Well, we're dealing with the other two options.
I'm not convinced they're going to have much of an impact, but to the extent that we can impact this and make the law be enforced, we need to try to do that.
That's
helpful at all, but I just want to let you know that with respect to
illegal search procedures, the criminal
shot and the suing shot aren't really taken
very seriously by the court, by all the people that have all the knowledge to die before we can try to write the law.
Mr. Chairman, if I could respond to that, I believe that exclusionary rule refers to the violation of constitutional rights. And I think the keeping of records, I'm not sure, rises to that level. I'm not an attorney, so I'm not sure I'm capable of debating that with you. But I don't believe that the issue of keeping the records bears directly to bearing arms. It may, I'm not sure. But I think from our perspective...
My point was that at least, I mean, we're going back and forth in this. I don't think that you feel too frightened by having these things in here that are trying to make certain that... Court knew with respect to the exclusionary rule. Chances are, who's got the police discretion for charging?
Well,
Mr. Chair,
is that going to happen? Well,
Chairman,
I hope so. But
well, I can I know at least in our county, if you commit a Class C felony, it does not make any difference. I think sometimes you get points for prosecuting a police officer, and you're going to be prosecuted, I think, if there's a clear violation of the law. And I think we'd prefer to live with a Class C felon than anything that was interpreted.
Let me put it this way. Every time somebody commits an unlawful criminal proceeding, all these police officers run out there and call the defense attorney to say, we think you should take a civil action, sue the police department, we won't take witness stand to testify on your behalf, to talk about what allows the officer to abuse your client's civil rights, and how you... he should have to pay now. I think the answer to that question is no.
I'm not saying that
anybody's police department is bad, because I think you got a
reputation
county, but I'm just saying we're kind of looking at putting some teeth in it in terms of a
Mr. Chair, let me make a suggestion. I think we're going nowhere fast on this provision, and if I could ask the committee's indulgence until the next time we meet, then I'd like to meet with the law enforcement representative, see if we can't craft up some sort of situation that, because I don't think what we're asking for is unreasonable, and I don't think what they're asking for is unreasonable. I think we're just missing, partly because I don't think we have enough information, and I'd like to talk to somebody from the Attorney General's office. Get one more piece of information about what constitutes a civil rights claim as opposed to a private right of action, because we're a little fuzzy there, and then try and bring back a resolution by our next meeting, and maybe we can go on and deal with something else more fruitfully.
Good point, Representative Clark. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with what was just stated. The one thing I wanted to point out and ask that effort to look at is the way I read A, which is lines 10 through 16, with regard to the Class C felony, that's personal against the employee who would violate this section. Whereas B, line 17 through 21, would authorize civil action to compel an agency to compel the agency, not further action against the employee who's covered under the felony, but to compel the agency to comply with the section, which would probably mean destruction of a record. If I'm reading this right, it wouldn't compound action against the person. It would kind of clean up after the incident by requiring the destruction of the record had one been illegally kept.
That's sort of my feeling is what Representative Clark is saying. I'm getting a little frustrated because we're reaching impasse on this thing, and I just don't see this being that big a deal.
I think I really believe we can. Solve it with a little more information.
A little more cooperation, we'll try to work it out. Appreciate that, Representative Clark. Council, what was our next? We're going to move on. Please stay right there because I'm sure we'll need you on the rest of the stuff.
Why are we going to Section 5? Deal with that issue.
We will have a House reporting again?
Yes. Except that, where's Kelly going? Yeah, why don't we have someone from the Oregon Psychological Association come in and explain their newest thing, and then...
You guys could probably just stay there and kind of scoot over. They can pull a couple of... We're going to have three up there? tell us what else we have to do to make this bill perfect.
Mr. Chair, I'm John McCulley, representing the Oregon Psychiatric Association. After your hearing on Monday night, your work session on Monday night, we talked with Mr. McGregor from the Speaker's office trying to address some of the current concerns that Dr. Bloom raised on Monday night. After those discussions, Ms. Godwin drafted the language that you hopefully have before you, dated May 26, 1989, proposed revision of Section 5 of HB 3470. The proposal before you clearly limits the application of the reporting to that which would come under Senate Bill 412, which is currently before the Crime and Corrections Subcommittee. As I think we have discussed previously in this committee, Senate Bill 412 relates to the duty of a psychotherapist to warn or to protect a person who may be subjected to a violent act by the psychotherapist's patient. One of the ways to discharge that duty to warn is to report the potential action of a patient to a local law enforcement agency. As the amendment before you is written, that report to the law enforcement agency would constitute Section 5 as we would see it. That report would be submitted to the Health Division, where a registry would be kept. The Health Division would notify the person who was reported at a period of time, which you'll notice in the amendment is subject to still some discussion, but that person who has been reported would be notified that they are on the registry and would have to go through the appeals process to be taken off the registry before they could purchase a firearm. I have to say that Dr. Bloom raised the questions about the registry, and I think that still from his theoretical standpoint and philosophical standpoint, probably does not totally support this. At the same time, we believe that it is a prudent and a good thing to do to get at the issues that we have been raising. I would also like to add at this point that we appreciate the committee's indulgence and the cooperation of the Speaker's office in listening to the concerns that we've raised on these issues. We believe that this language that you have before you will address most of the concerns that we have raised.
Mr. Chair, there's two members of the committee. There's two issues that I'd like to bring to the committee's attention as they're addressing this issue. You'll note in the proposed amendments that there is a fill-in-the-blank in terms of how long after a client or patient has been reported. There's a 10, 30, 60, and 90-day notation in there, and the committee is going to have to decide what a reasonable period of time is. The other issue that I think needs some discussion, and a limited discussion, but I think needs to be discussed nonetheless, is that under the after discussions that this committee has had previously, they created a 6-year window for a person that has been civilly committed. This registry is a 10-year registry. I think, given the fact that you're dealing with the same issues and some of the same problems, that there's some merit for that number being the same. I don't know how you justify one being 6 and one being 10, and it'll be certainly my recommendation that the committee look at those two numbers and decide which they want to go with. But
first number?
6.
Where is that?
Oh, that's on the prohibited persons list. You have been committed. It's for a period of 6 years. Well, I'm going to gummy this up even more, to quote Representative Bryan.
Thank you.
We now have a 6-year retroactivity if you've been civilly committed under the provisions of this bill. If you are committed under the proposed amendments to the civil commitment law and have a not gun safe notation, it's good forever, similar to a felony, and then the mental health registry is good for 10 years. Somehow I think all that has to be reconciled into a consistent policy. I don't have any great suggestions, but you're dealing with the same group of individuals in a potentially. I mean, there may be legitimate reasons for doing it, having different numbers, but I think that there's some validity to at least raising that issue and handling it consistently. Those are my two issues for the committees.
Let me ask a question. Assuming that House Bill, what is it, 412, counts? Problems with the 5B section?
5B will come out.
Well,
5A and 5B would all come out under this.
I know it would.
Oh, okay.
Assuming the 412 becomes law anyway.
We do?
Last time we were here, you had problems.
Mr. Chair?
It was Dr. Bloom. I think Dr. Bloom made some comments about
clarify something too. In the way that this bill is written now, a lot of the people that would be reported under 512 under 5B are going to be prohibited from purchase because they're going to be civilly committed. So you're not really losing anybody. You're just more clearly separating the camps, so to speak. So you're not losing anybody, I don't think. I mean, you may be losing some, but the significant number of your reports that would have come under 5A and 5B are going to be reported anyway because they'll be persons who are civilly committed.
What if 412 becomes law? Is the 5B section satisfactory to you if 412 becomes law?
No, it is not, Mr. Chair. Diana Godwin for the Oregon Psychological Association.
Come out.
5B?
5B and 5A come out, and the new 5 goes in.
Mr. Chair, the way I drafted these amendments, all of what you presently see in your dash 10 amendments, which would start on page 13, line 14, you would delete lines 14 through 30, then you delete all of page 14, and then lines 1 and 2 on page 14. In other words, everything you've presently got in the dash 10 amendments, Section 5, Section 5A, and Section 5B would be deleted under my amendment, and this would be what Section 5 would look like.
And the practical effect of that is what?
It's no longer going to hit the
No, Mr. Chair, it would, in fact, depend on passage of Senate Bill 412, because without passage of Senate Bill 412, you would not have the mandatory reporting requirement and duty to warn that we are imposing under 412. So you wouldn't have the mandatory reports going into the local law enforcement agency when a psychotherapist determines that a patient is dangerous to the point that a victim needs to be protected. And so without those, then you wouldn't have any reports made to a local law enforcement agency to be turned into the registry. So it's very important that 412 pass, or else Section 5, as it's written, wouldn't work, obviously.
So, as you proposed it.
As we proposed it.
Okay. If Senate Bill 412 doesn't pass.
If it does or does not.
It does not pass.
Yeah.
Then we'd have to recraft something, and I'm not sure what that would be, whether we could reach any agreement under that.
Her language falls to pieces if 412 fails.
That's correct.
Mr. Chair,
412 came out of the subcommittee originally and then went to full and then got pulled back?
Yes, and I think it's out of full as of yesterday.
Mr. Chair,
no, it didn't.
Yesterday it went back to subcommittee, and they didn't get to it in subcommittee yesterday. It's scheduled again, I understand, for the week after next. Senate Bill 412 has some technical problems that were discovered after it went out of the subcommittee. And so it's being brought back to correct those problems.
I don't believe those are substantive problems, though. I mean, there's not a substantive problem with the bill. And in fact, I'm a little surprised to hear, and I know Mr. McCauley gave me a note yesterday, that bill won't come up again until a week and a half from now. So
the correction subcommittee's not meeting next week. Or are they doing sentencing guidelines?
We're buried with sentencing guidelines all next week. Yeah, I think that's the reason. It has nothing to do with Senate Bill 412.
I want to ask the committee, does anybody here have any particular strong feelings on this one way or another?
Mr. Chair, just a kind of a general statement is I think the people in front of us have brought us some real good issues. I talked to Dr. Bloom the other day. They're very knowledgeable people. I'm not sure, and we need to pay attention to what they're saying. I'm not sure that we're going to be able totally to avoid a little collision in some areas, because one of the things that this bill, by definition, is trying to do is to make it more difficult for certain mentally ill people to own guns. And there are some people who think that who I think that that is stigmatization, and I think we've got the attention there that we're going to have to work with. I think we can do it in such a way that it's less offensive rather than more offensive. I'm not sure we're going to be able to do it in such a way that it's totally unoffensive to them. Not given what we're trying to do with the bill.
I do know that on this issue, we've given a lot of ground already, and this is a major point of contention for the speaker. It's her bill, and I'm not going to run over her on this section. That's where I mean, at least me personally.
Mr. Chair, so the speaker has agreed to this language.
She agrees to it. Representative Bryan.
I guess my question would be, what does this do? Now, this, the 412 type of language would require public or private providers. And that's why it simplifies so much of the language. It takes care of the, you know, who should be doing this.
Say every psychotherapist, and right. That's everybody who's licensed as a psychotherapist.
Now, separate from that, what about, does this also substitute in language of commitment? People who have been committed would no longer be reported into the health division? Is that a separate section, or is this proposed to take care of them?
They wouldn't be reported on the health division registry because there's going to be another place that one would check to make sure whether or not that person had been.
And the police holds?
Hold issues we have not dealt with.
I guess what I'm trying to be careful as to what the 412 language replaces. I mean, I know physically it replaces 5A, 5B.
I'll tell you what it does.
What does it do to the other areas that we have been addressing, like the commitments and so forth?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bryan, let me try to answer that question for you, and then if I can't do it, I'll let somebody else try. There was some... Section 5, as it's written in the bill, I think attempted to create one registry that would have on it civil commitments and or persons who were basically hospitalized who the providers felt should not own guns. And there was some, I think, duplication there as well as private reports. Mm-hmm. But I think it was one, that you'd have two stop shopping. Okay, so you'd either go to the central registry to pick up persons who were alleged to be mentally ill who shouldn't have guns, or you'd have your law enforcement grocery store. I think that under the bill as it's now being written, a law enforcement agency is going to have to check in three places instead of two, but I think the trade-off is you are coming up with a cleaner system and one that's less that violates people's, I think, rights and privacy a little bit less. Because as I understand the way it's going to come out now, law enforcement will have to check with the mental health division for their registry. There will be someplace a list of persons who have been civilly committed, and then you'll have your police criminal checks. So I think Section 5 at one point was an attempt to bring together, in part, your civil commitment persons who have been civilly committed, and then the other private reports. It got very mucky to do that, and there were a lot of problems with that. So we are now separating them out into cleanly, what I hope will be, cleanly persons who are prohibited because of criminal activity, persons who are cleanly prohibited because they have been civilly committed, and then there's going to be a third group of individuals who, because of the report made to the health division under Senate Bill 412, will also be prohibited unless relief is provided from purchasing a firearm.
Where is the second group taken care of in the bill if all of Section 5 is gone?
The second group being which group?
The one you referred to, the commitments. 412,
oh, this, well, the commitments... The commitment group is just included in by definition because of the prohibited persons list. If you look on page 10 of the bill, lines 9 through 14 take care of persons who were civilly committed. The only hole that may result if 412 doesn't pass are private provider citizen type of reports, for lack of a better word.
Mr. Chair.
Clark, let me check something real quick before I get Representative Clark's question. The Speaker's office supports this language, the new language before us.
I think there's a high level of confidence that Senate Bill 412 is going to pass. Okay. I mean, and I also might point out, and this is not necessarily a good way to go approach this, but being pragmatic, Senate Bill 412 should hit the floor
or not hit the floor before House Bill 3470 does. House Bill 3470 still has to go to the Senate. So, and we're all under some very tight time frames. So I think that if it appears that 412 is running into problems, then this issue can be revisited. Hopefully this will be out of here and off the floor and in the Senate by the time 412 lives or dies on the floor. But I think that if people just track it that way, we're not totally the issue is not going to be totally foreclosed because of where the various bills are in the process, and also because of the Senate Judiciary Chair has a very strong interest in this area and in this issue, and I'm sure that she will re-raise it.
Mr. Chair, if I might mention, we do have to be careful about which is the later enacted bill. We may have to be careful about that.
That's not my issue at this point.
Right, but we track with Legislative Council. And my question is whether or not 3470 is ever going to go to a Senate substantive committee.
Oh, because it's going to Ways and Means? Well, we can amend it. I mean, it can be amended at Ways and Means if necessary. They've done some pretty substantive amending of bills that have come out of this committee in the last couple of weeks. So the issue is it's not done. And so if 412 dies, there will be time to fix it.
Chair, the council, and anybody else there, it seems to me then that the practical effect of the direction we're going is to remove private provider reporting.
No, quite the contrary.
412 is all private provider reporting.
Mr. Chair,
is all provider reporting.
All providers, private or public, must report under Senate Bill 412.
Mr. Chair, John McCulley.
Broadening the net and making the standard perhaps a little more accurate.
And a little bit more narrow, I think.
A little narrow, but a little more accurate. A little more targeted is perhaps a better phrase.
Mr. Chair, I just might comment on that. You're making it more targeted, but you're also including more people potentially subject to reporting.
Oh, I understand. As I say, you're broadening the net, but targeting the reporting a little more specifically.
Right, because the original bill dealt only with psychiatrists and psychologists, or the most recent language, and now you have all psychotherapists who would be subject to the 412 reporting.
And I should know this, what my wife does. What's a psychotherapist?
Mr. Chair, a psychotherapist is defined in ORS 40.230, which is the psychotherapist-patient privilege statute under the evidence code, and they are defined as all persons who are licensed, registered, regulated, etc., to deliver mental health care services, or I believe, is it alcohol and drug or substance abuse?
Okay, so
I check it, but
there's a whole lot of people out there that are master's level counselors.
They're about to be licensed
under a bill that just came out the other day.
Right.
They would then be hooked in to
this.
Yes,
they would be.
Okay, because it's been my experience that there are lots of those people out there with their shingles hung up doing real counseling.
That's correct.
And they are about to become licensed.
They're about to become licensed, which means they're about to become subject to this.
Okay. Thank you. That broadens the net even further. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am now satisfied.
Representative, what I'm going to do is personally move the handwritten amendments or the typed amendments. We have. I'm going to move them with a 10-day.
We'd like to argue for a longer period of time for purposes of protection of the psychotherapist. We really would.
For the 30-day time period.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Can we have some comments, Mr. Chair, from the law enforcement community on these? Do you have a chance to review these? Do you have any comments? Or John Nichols or anyone who has from the working group?
To me, this is Senate Bill 412. First paragraph of Senate Bill 412.
It's difficult, Mr. Chair, where the two bills are in separate bills and in separate subcommittees, but are integral parts of this approach.
I feel like a hole is being created. I'm not real comfortable with that.
Actually, you're not. Actually, you're filling a hole. Mm-hmm. Explaining it very well. If you think that there's a hole being created, then
I don't think we're finished with this issue. Let me put it that way.
Whether or not this amendment.
fully expect us to come back and revisit this issue at the next meeting, Representative.
And there will never be, there will only be acquiescence to the way that this issue was resolved. There will never be agreement. That, would you say, would you say that's an accurate statement? There will only be acquiescence.
I think if we have no opposition, I know the Speaker's office is in favor of this. Our mental health people are in favor of it, and if there's no opposition to the amendment, with a 30-day time period chosen.
And the deletion of the necessary sections in here.
Deletion of necessary sections as per the written amendment.
What about the 10-year issue, Mr. Chair, going from 10 to 6 to be more consistent with civil commitments?
Council, can we also go with
for the list?
Yes.
I think that would probably be appropriate.
Yeah, we're going to go with a 6-year time period. Everybody.